now you can share the topics that drive the discussions of your favorite talk shows with TalkStream Live's topic-driven talk radio.
We gotta talk. Take a drive.
List and promote real-time talk radio topics or post the topics that you want to hear. Hot topics are tweeted and retweeted and include simple click-to-listen audio links. The future of talk radio is topic-driven talk radio.
That's what I call real drive.
Available now at TalkStreamLive.com.
You just have to see it to believe it. Best-selling author L.A. Marzulli just returned from a top-secret trip to Peru, where he returned with color photographs and physical evidence of an ancient race of hybrid giants, many standing over 10 feet tall. Marzulli crawled through the jungles of Peru, exploring hidden caves and private museums. He photographed the skulls and the skeletons, returning with a book that will change your worldview. On the Trail of the Nephilim is his explosive new book, chock full of 120 color photographs of the gigantic skulls and the skeletons and the megalithic monuments these giants built. The companion DVD, Watchers 6, documents Marzulli's trip, exposing the massive cover-up for all to see. The book is $29.95. The DVD is $19.95. Get them both for $39.95, a $10 discount. I guarantee you, you've never seen anything quite like this before. A picture is worth a thousand words. Go to lamarzulli.net to order now. lamarzulli.net. That's www.lamarzulli.net.
A reporter is plunged into the dark world of money laundering and the worldwide crime network when he stumbles across a scam so big that his life is on the line. Now the true story can finally be told. An investigation that will take you across the globe to England, Eastern Europe, Australia, Panama, Africa, and New Zealand. How an international network of money launderers got away with more than $100 million stolen from the Christian community. Exposing the Ponzi Masters is the true account of one man determined to expose the truth and the legions that tried to stop him. A story so dark that you won't believe what you are reading. A story so important, it's being monitored by government agencies worldwide. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, a true crime expose from James L. Paris, the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com. Exposing the Ponzi Masters, available on Kindle from Amazon.com.
This is Jim Paris Live, your source for money and political conversation from a Christian perspective. And now your host, the author of more than 20 books, and the editor-in-chief of ChristianMoney.com, James L. Paris.
All right, good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another edition of the program. We are live tonight, and we have a fantastic program lined up for you. In about 7 or 8 minutes, my guest will be with us, Dr. Jerome Corsi, and we're going to be getting into the JFK assassination. And if you're not familiar with this, he does have a brand new book out on it, and it's just one of the best books you'd ever want to read on the JFK assassination. It's called Who Really Killed Kennedy? 50 years later, stunning new revelations about the JFK assassination. And, of course, it was just a few days ago that the nation, I don't want to use the phrase celebrated, but recognized the 50th anniversary of the JFK assassination. And there was even a celebration of John F. Kennedy's life held in Dealey Plaza in downtown Dallas, Texas. So we're going to get into all of this tonight, and it's going to be one of those shows for the ages. We're going to take live calls, and if you've ever wanted to maybe spin your own JFK conspiracy theory, you want to ask a question to our guest, Dr. Jerome Corsi, you will have the opportunity to in just a few moments. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. I hope you had a great holiday weekend with your family. We got together this Thanksgiving with my adult children and also my mother. We went over and picked her up and brought her in from Orlando, which is just a couple of hours away. And we enjoyed a nice holiday weekend, spent a little bit of time out on the sailboat. One day we had a fantastic smoked turkey. And I just bought a smoker a week ago, so I'm brand new at this smoking of meat deal. But it is, I'll tell you what, it was the best turkey we've ever had. I mean, there is nothing like smoked meat. And to sort of teach myself how to use the smoker, I went up to the grocery store a few days before Thanksgiving, and I got a big roast, buy one, get one free. And so I cooked these two roasts in the smoker. It took like 7 hours. It takes a long time. So, you know, you've got to be patient. And I gave one of them to a good friend, one of the roasts, and then we enjoyed one here. And then, of course, we smoked a turkey, put it in about 8 o'clock in the morning, and it was ready at about 1:30. So it does take a while for the meat to cook that way. But a very interesting recipe. I stuffed the turkey with apples instead of stuffing, and that was to create moisture inside the turkey while it was being smoked. And then I injected the turkey with apple juice, and we used an apple wood as well in the smoker. So it had sort of a smoky apple seasoning to it, and it just came out great. So if you're my friend on Facebook, you saw the before and after pictures. But very, very interesting. So tonight we're going to be talking about the JFK assassination. I've been looking forward to this show now for several weeks. And I want to also take the first couple of minutes here and tell you about my book that just came out. Bob Yetman and I wrote a book about the JFK assassination, which is now available. This is strictly for Kindle, our book. It's an e-book available strictly for Kindle. And it is Executive Order 11,110, Did the Fed Kill JFK? And there is a very little known element to the whole JFK assassination story that many people don't know. This first came up in Jim Marr's book, Crossfire. And it's very, very interesting if you look into the history of this, and we cover this in our book, which, again, is available at Amazon. It's a Kindle book. It's not available as a print book, but only available on Kindle. And we get into the fact that in June of 1963, President Kennedy signed an Executive Order 11,110, that gave the Treasury Secretary the authority to create $4.3 billion in silver certificate currency. Now, for those not familiar with what silver certificate currency is, I, in fact, have one sitting right here on my desk. And we ordered a number of these because we're planning on giving away quite a number of silver certificate dollars in a Facebook contest we're going to be doing here that will start shortly to sort of promote the book. But what a silver certificate dollar is, and you may have seen one of these if you've ever been a coin collector or been to a coin dealer, you may have seen one of these. It actually looks like a regular dollar. But if you look at the very bottom of a silver certificate dollar, it says $1, and then it says in silver, payable to the bearer on demand. And the way this worked was you could take this dollar and you could trade it in for a silver dollar, or later they required you to trade it in for silver bullion. But this was actually like carrying around $1 worth of physical silver. And of course, as everybody knows, in 1971, Richard Nixon took us off of the gold standard. And so we really had a completely free-floating currency that wasn't backed up by anything. But this was back in the days, you know, the early 1960s when these silver certificate dollars were still in circulation. And the theory goes like this, and we get into this in our book, that by authorizing the Federal Reserve to issue $4.3 billion in silver certificate currency, what Kennedy was doing was really sort of an end run around the Federal Reserve. And he was creating money that could be issued directly by the Treasury that would not be issued by the Federal Reserve. So we're talking about a silver certificate dollar as opposed to a Federal Reserve note. And this is very, very fascinating. Again, part of the assassination theory that the story that you may never hear about. Again, it was mentioned just briefly in the Jim Marr's book, Crossfire, but many people theorize that among those that had it out for JFK was the Federal Reserve, the very powerful Federal Reserve. And as we mention in our book, here we are celebrating the 50th anniversary, not celebrating, recognizing the 50th anniversary of the assassination of JFK, having a celebration of the man's life in Dallas, Texas. 1 month later, the Federal Reserve will celebrate its 100th birthday. So there is, we believe there's a tie-in between JFK's intention to possibly break up the Federal Reserve and his assassination. And that is covered in our new book, which is available over at Amazon, which talks extensively about Executive Order 11,110. All right, we're going to get into it tonight. We're going to be bringing on our guest here in just a moment, but let's set this up. Every time I listen to this audio, it gives me chills. I was not old enough to be around when this all happened. My mother remembers where she was when the announcement came over the news. Most people that were older than, say, 5 or 6 years old will never forget where they were when they heard the news that the President of the United States had been assassinated in Dallas, Texas. And let's go to this audio clip with Walter Cronkite. Let's relive that moment.
At the airport in Dallas, and throughout the streets of Dallas, the Dallas police had been augmented by some 400 policemen called in on their day off, because there were some fears and concerns in Dallas that there might be demonstrations, at least, that could embarrass the president. Because it was only on October the 24th that our ambassador to the United Nations, Adlai Stevenson, was assaulted in Dallas, leaving a dinner meeting there. From Dallas, Texas, the flash, apparently official, President Kennedy died at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time, 2 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, some 38 minutes ago. Vice President Lyndon Johnson has left the hospital in Dallas, but we do not know to where he has proceeded. Presumably, he will be taking the oath of office shortly and become the 36th President of the United States.
Wow, shocking just to listen to that audio today and to believe that it was 50 years ago, that 50 years has already passed. And there's so many people speculating, so many different theories out there. But if you know Dr. Jerome Corsi, you know this guy is a researcher. He's a researcher's researcher. So when he came out with his book on the JFK assassination, I had to get it, and we made arrangements to have him with us tonight. Dr. Jerome Corsi, welcome to Jim Paris Live.
Jim, good to be with you. Thank you.
Thank you so much for being with us, Dr. Corsi. And I want to start by asking you your own personal memories. I assume you're old enough to actually remember where you were when that happened. What are your memories of that day?
Well, I was 17. I was in high school. It was the last class of the day. It was St. Ignatius High School in Cleveland. And we had a physics class. It was last class. And at the end of the class, the principal came on the megaphone, whatever you call it, the loudspeaker in the classrooms, the PA system, and said that the president had been shot and was dead. And it was hard to believe. I had driven to school that day. When I went out in the car, turned on the radio, they were playing Jack Kennedy's first inaugural address. And, of course, that's when I realized it was true, because there's no reason they'd be playing that address unless he was dead. So, again, it was just shocking. I mean, no one had anticipated or thought that someone who'd seemed so young, who'd seemed so vital, the new frontier, especially after President Eisenhower, who was the oldest president we'd ever had, now the youngest president, it didn't seem possible that he could be killed that suddenly. So it was just a terrible shock. I think the whole nation felt a terrible shock. That I think, when you listen to Walter Cronkite again, you relive it. You remember just how impossible it seemed that Jack Kennedy could have been dead.
And this was at the time, and for people that are too young to remember this or have not studied the history of it, This was more than an event that a famous person died. That day, there were so many questions in the air. Perhaps the greatest question was, were we possibly at war? Were the Russians behind this? People today don't really understand what this meant that day and all of the concerns that were there in terms of trying to figure out who was behind this. And was this the first wave of an attack against the U.S.? Who was behind this, and what else did they have planned? What were some of the fears happening that day and the several days following the event itself?
Well, I think you outlined it pretty well. I mean, the initial my reaction was not that it was a attack by Russia or a communist attack killing the president. That didn't hit me as even likely at the time. I didn't think the Russians or the communist forces would be so reckless to invite a U.S. counterattack starting a world war over killing Jack Kennedy. In the first hours of it, in the first day or two, it was impossible to know what the scope of the plot was or who had been involved in killing Kennedy. When this Lee Harvey Oswald was produced as the killer, it didn't seem possible. And then, of course, on Sunday, when Jack Kennedy was killed on Friday, this was Sunday when Lee Harvey Oswald was killed by Oswald, it was a lot like watching the second airplane fly into the World Trade Center. The first airplane, you could say, well, the plane got off course or it could be something bizarre. But the second airplane, you knew immediately it was terrorism. As soon as you saw Jack Ruby killing Jack Kennedy, or killing Lee Harvey Oswald, you knew immediately that it was a mob shutting Oswald up. I mean, that was my immediate reaction. This is a mob hit now. Even the way Jack Ruby looked, wearing a fedora and the suit and his whole demeanor, he looked like a mob guy, and it looked like he was in collusion with the Dallas police. I mean, you got to remember the Dallas police, too. I lived in Cleveland, Ohio, watching the Dallas police. They look like the Keystone Cops. I mean, they look completely incompetent, walking around in cowboy hats. You had the halls filled with newsmen. It was chaos. And the Dallas Police Department at the time was a shoddy police department. It was known for framing suspects, for doing bad convictions. Subsequent DAs and police chiefs have found that this was one of the most corrupt police departments in America at the time. And just watching them, it was an embarrassment to think that this was part of America, that this police force, which had been so negligent not to have adequate police protection in the streets, now was conducting this, carnival-like investigation of the crime, ending up with Ruby killing Oswald. It looked like almost a setup, like the police were bringing Oswald out to be shot. I mean, it was at a minimum gross incompetence, if not just collusion in the silencing of Oswald.
And most people don't realize, Dr. Corsi, as you just outlined it, what a short window of time. This year, the 50th anniversary actually fell on a Friday. So to give people an idea of what happened with Ruby, what we're looking at is the president is shot, pronounced dead at 1 p.m. Central on a Friday, and then less than 48 hours later on a Sunday morning, Ruby kills Oswald. And not only that, it's my understanding that Ruby was actually stalking Oswald in the police headquarters prior to that Sunday morning, looking for his earliest opportunity, which turned out to be that Sunday morning. So in your view, there was no doubt that he was a man on a mission to shut up Oswald.
It just looked like it at the time. Yes, Ruby had been in the police department. Of course, we didn't know that at the time. That came out in the photographs later when he was identified as one of the posing as a reporter and asking, even providing information at one of the times when Oswald was brought before the press. But the whole thing was just a carnival atmosphere. It was bizarre watching it on television. And even as a kid, I mean, you'd say this is just not professional law enforcement. Kennedy was shot at 12:30 p.m. local time in Dallas. And by 2:15, Oswald is arrested and brought into the police station. The police are already wrapping up the case, framing Oswald as the killer. And the frame-up is astounding when you study what we know now after 50 years. I mean, it's still amazing to me how many of the mainstream media continue the CIA disinformation. Even, you know, people like Bill O'Reilly at Fox writing The Killing Kennedy, which is nothing more than repeating the CIA's cover story that Lee Harvey Oswald was the killer. Anybody who's studied any of the 50 years of research with any, you know, depth or seriousness knows it's a joke. When Kennedy was brought into the Parkland Hospital immediately after the shooting, and Parkland Hospital was a world-class hospital in Dallas. It is today. It was then. All the doctors and some 20 doctors came to the emergency room and all called, you know, anybody in the hospital who was a surgeon was asked to come to the emergency room, and the wounds were all seen as wounds of entrance. The throat wound that Jack Kennedy suffered was about the diameter of a number 2 lead pencil. The back of Jack Kennedy's head was seen to be blown away. You could actually see the brain coming out the back of his head. And the doctors held a press conference, and they told the world that this was a front entry wound, that Jack Kennedy had been shot from the front. Now, that meant a conspiracy, because Lee Harvey Oswald was supposedly in the Texas School Book Depository, and that was behind the limousine when the shooting started. So any front entrance wound meant there had to be a second shooter, and a second shooter meant a conspiracy.
Now, one of the things that you get into in your book, which is fascinating, and most people just don't know about this, that this was not the first assassination attempt planned for November of 1963. Tell us about the other two planned attempts and what happened there.
Well, a lot of research has been done on this. People are just unaware of it. A House committee even concluded in investigating the assassination there was 95% chance of an assassination and repudiated the Warren Report. But these two prior attempts, one was in Chicago and one was in Tampa in November 63. In Chicago, and both these cases were set up the same, with a shooter who was a patsy with a high-powered rifle in a building overlooking the motorcade. In Chicago, the first African-American Secret Service agent got wind of the plot and warned the Kennedys, and the Kennedys at the very last minute canceled the trip to Chicago, but yet the patsy was apprehended. The gunmen, who were about four or five gunmen, got away. In Tampa, the Kennedys just tremendously beefed up security. They couldn't cancel the trip, and the shooters called off the attempt to kill Kennedy. Now, Dallas, it had actually been raining in the morning when the airplane left Fort Worth to fly the short flight over to Dallas, and I think if it had stayed raining, the bubble top would have been on the limousine, and certainly those concerned about Kennedy's security that day, with the bubble top on, even though the bubble top was plexiglass, it was not bulletproof, the shooters probably would have stood down because, again, you wouldn't know how that plexiglass covering would affect a shot. It might deflect a shot. So, you know, you had three attempts in November 63 to kill Kennedy. All the plots were identical. And this whole idea of killing Kennedy with a patsy and a plot like occurred in Dallas was concocted by the CIA, Alan Dulles, who was the head of the CIA under Eisenhower, during the Eisenhower administration, 1954 in Guatemala, to protect a fruit company, the United Fruit Company, and E. Howard Hunt was involved. We essentially ultimately killed the head of state and said one of the palace guards did the killing, and then we said no one saw the palace guard do the killing of the president, and then the palace guard, CIA said, shot himself, so you had a dead patsy that was blamed for the assassination in Guatemala. And, I mean, that meant there was no investigation, no trial, no defense. The CIA held a picture with Eisenhower at E. Howard Hunt and Dulles in the Oval Office celebrating how clever they were to pull this off. And that kind of a plot was used again and again. It was the same model that was used twice in November in the plots that failed to kill Kennedy, and then it was used in Dallas in the plot that succeeded. If the plots in Chicago or Tampa had succeeded, we would never be talking about Lee Harvey Oswald. We'd be talking about the patsies who would have been pinned with the murder in Chicago if it had succeeded there, or in Tampa if it had succeeded there. Lee Harvey Oswald would probably have been alive and, you know, never pinned with this killing, because it would never, the attempt in Dallas would not have been necessary had one of the two previous ones succeeded.
Our guest tonight is Dr. Jerome Corsi, the name of the book, Who Really Killed Kennedy? 50 Years Later, Stunning New Revelations About the JFK Assassination. In a couple of moments, we will be taking your phone calls. Here's the number to call in with your questions tonight, 888-287-3316, 888-287-3316. We'll also be taking questions by email, the email address jim@christianmoney.com, jim@christianmoney.com. Dr. Corsi, we'll break with convention a little bit here, and you already let the news out here, and sort of the spoiler, if you will, that it is your theory that the chief architect behind this was Alan Dulles. And I want you to set this up by sharing with our audience, who was Alan Dulles, other than, of course, being the CIA director at the time of the assassination. But give us a little bit of history on Dulles and sort of the power that he represented of the Washington establishment.
Well, see, I say Jack Kennedy was the first victim of the New World Order, because if you take a look at these forces, Jack Kennedy would not fight the lying CIA wars that Alan Dulles wanted to fight. Now, Alan Dulles, before World War II, Alan Dulles and his brother John Foster Dulles, who was the Secretary of State under Eisenhower, were working with a law firm, Cromwell and Sullivan, and with Brown Brothers in New York, and Brown Brothers Harriman, an investment firm, and they were financing Hitler. We financed Hitler. It's one of the ugly truths of United States secret history, and the partners in doing that were the Bush family. Prescott Bush and George Herbert Walker were both members from Yale, Skull and Bones. They were both members of Harriman Brown Brothers, and the Dulleses and the Bushes together ran a Nazi bank in New York, which was called Union Bank. Franklin Roosevelt closed it down after Pearl Harbor, about 7 months after Pearl Harbor. It took them a while to close it down. But see, the whole idea of a new world order was a Hitler idea. I got to remember, Hitler was a leftist. It was National Socialism. That's what the Nazis were. And their idea was that they could have government working with business, you know, not like the communists who wanted to eliminate business. They wanted to have a end to private property. The Nazis wanted private property. They wanted to fight lying Reichstag fires, wars, you know, where you could have munitions developed. The munitions would develop the economy. This was the whole idea of getting out of the Depression and the Weimar Republic. And the Nazis would have a big CIA, you know, Gestapo. Hitler was the first to introduce universal health care. If Hitler knew he could have a world in which the Germany ruled the EU, he had the NSA and the CIA taping every conversation in America, and national sovereignty was submerged in transatlantic partnership, Hitler would have signed on in a minute. This was, you know, the Dulleses continued to work during World War II and burned Switzerland. Alan Dulles helped the Nazis escape. He was starting with 1943 to bring money from Martin Bormann, Hitler's secretary, into the stock market in the United States. Bormann invested in some 700 U.S. corporations with Nazi loot. And we, in a sense, through Dulles's vision, you know, our anti-communism became the Fourth Reich, and Kennedy would not do this. Kennedy would not go along with the Bay of Pigs. He wouldn't go along with fighting in Laos. He was not going to fight in Vietnam with our troops. He thought these were lying wars the CIA wanted to fight for this agenda of building munitions, this new world order, transitioning into a global system of, countries like the United States and Germany dominating and exploiting the wealth of the third world. Kennedy didn't want to participate. And I think that was a major reason why when Kennedy fired Dulles after the Bay of Pigs, the forces in this military-industrial complex, which Eisenhower warned about, knew that Johnson was their man. Johnson was happy to fight lying CIA wars, happy to use the Tonkin Gulf Resolution, which was a complete lie, as the authorizing legislation to ramp up Vietnam. And Kennedy was right. Vietnam was a war that should never have been fought because the regime in Vietnam was corrupt. The CIA in 1961 was already running drugs out of Southeast Asia. It was a losing effort. But, this is why I think people got to understand the context and know how much of the CIA, especially under Dulles, was this new world order organization running assassinations and covert operations all over the world.
And our guest tonight is Dr. Jerome Corsi, the name of his book, Who Really Killed Kennedy? Fascinating book. Dr. Corsi, we've got a break coming up here, then we're going to come back and take calls. I have to ask you, though, I'm sure you did a lot of reading to write this book. You're a student of history yourself. If you had to recommend, other than your own book, one or two other books on the Kennedy assassination, we've got a lot of folks listening tonight that are very interested in this topic. Any other books that you personally thought were an interesting read?
Well, I think James DeEugenio, he writes some of the best books. His Destiny Betrayed. He's got a new one called Parkland. I think he's doing some of the most. He has for years devoted his life and his career to the JFK assassination. I think he's one of the most brilliant of the young researchers exploring this. And he also, I believe, would agree that this background I'm putting forward about Dulles was fundamental in the reason Kennedy was killed.
Very good. And we're going to take our break. This is 4 minutes, Dr. Corsi, so you can stretch your legs a little bit. And we come back, we'll be taking your phone calls for Dr. Jerome Corsi on the JFK assassination 50 years later. 888-287-3316. 888-287-3316. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back in approximately 4 minutes. Hello, everybody. This is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. Recently, I did an event in Chicago unveiling a brand new service called Christian Money Plus. It's been years in the making, and I'm super excited to let you know that it is now available. At the centerpiece of this new program is the ability for you to have unlimited access to me personally using the internet. You'll also receive my 12-page newsletter mailed to your home each and every month. Now, there are tons of other benefits, such as our suite of financial calculators, model portfolios, and much, much more. Right now, I'm offering several bonuses to our new subscribers. Some of these bonuses include a video on how to use the internet to raise money for your idea or project. This is money you will never have to pay back. There's also a second video on how to save money by dropping cable TV, and I also cover on this video how to get free home phone service for life. Yes, you can drop cable TV and still get hundreds of channels on your television set legally using the internet. All of that, including how to get the free home phone service for life, all of that on your second bonus video. Additional bonus reports include how to opt out of Obamacare, as I did, and save thousands by joining what's called Christian Medical Sharing. Another bonus report shows you step-by-step how to stop Google from spying on you. All of this information is available right now to subscribers of our brand new service, Christian Money Plus. I sure hope you'll consider joining us. All of the money that comes in every month from Christian Money Plus goes to further the mission of our website, ChristianMoney.com. Check it out today. That's ChristianMoneyPlus.com. Again, that's ChristianMoneyPlus.com. You can subscribe right now and access all of these bonus reports within a matter of just a few seconds. Check it out right now. That's ChristianMoneyPlus.com.
He became a millionaire by the age of 30, but ended up in bankruptcy, losing it all by the age of 40. The amazing story of one man driven to the brink of death after becoming the victim of an embezzlement scheme. After planning his own suicide, he turned to God and discovered a secret so powerful that it changed his life forever. How to pray for a financial miracle is more than just one man's story of beating the odds and rebuilding his life after a total financial collapse. It's a book that reveals a life-changing prayer method that anyone can use to find hope during life's darkest financial trials. You will learn how to enlist God's help in solving your financial problems, the biggest prayer mistake most people make when approaching God with a financial need, how prayer can provide you with immediate answers and direction to your most pressing financial issues, how to pray for a financial miracle, an Amazon.com bestseller from James L. Paris, the editor of ChristianMoney.com, how to pray for a financial miracle, available in paperback or for Kindle from Amazon.com. You're listening to Jim Paris Radio.
Hello, everybody. This is Jim Paris, editor-in-chief of the website ChristianMoney.com. You know, about a year ago, I started getting concerned about the cost of our family's health insurance, literally costing us thousands and thousands of dollars each year, and the cost continued to go up and up and up. And I started doing some research into an alternative called Christian Medical Sharing. And I learned that through a special law, a special provision, Christians are able to opt out of Obamacare and actually get into this alternative to traditional health insurance called Christian Medical Sharing. I decided to go ahead and move into a plan like that, and I'm saving a lot of money. Now, if you'd like to find out more about it, get more of the details to find out if it's for you or not, I've written an article on it. In the article, I give you more details, including I actually mention the organization that I decided to go with. If you'd like to get all of the information on this and find out if it might be for you, check out this website, medicalsharing.christianmoney.com. That's medicalsharing.christianmoney.com. Okay, we are back, and before we go back to our guest, Dr. Jerome Corsi, I would be remiss if I didn't make mention of the fact that Paul Crouch, founder of the Trinity Broadcasting Network, passed away yesterday, and Paul Crouch was a very nice man to me, and I was on his program, the Praise the Lord program, many times over the years, and a couple of times he was hosting, and was very nice to bring me back in the green room and chat with me on a one-on-one basis. So our condolences go out to Paul Crouch and his family and the faithful viewers of Trinity Broadcasting Network. Next week, we're going to be talking about the so-called prophecy of the popes, and our guest will be Dr. Robert Thiel, and we're going to be getting into Catholic and Christian prophecy and how this might relate to the current pope, Pope Francis. Very, very interesting topic that will be next week on Jim Paris Live. Tonight we're taking phone calls right now for our guest, Dr. Jerome Corsi, and his brand new book, Who Really Killed Kennedy, 50 Years Later, Stunning New Revelations About the JFK Assassination. Your phone call is now 888-287-3316, 888-287-3316, or emails jim@christianmoney.com. jim@christianmoney.com. And Dr. Corsi, I'm going to break with tradition. I normally go to my callers first, but this email, I've got to read this, so I'm going to paraphrase it quickly, but it's a fascinating question. This person wants to know, emailing from Chicago, how is it if Alan Dulles and JFK were such arch enemies, being that Kennedy fired him, that he ended up on the Warren Commission? Not only on the Warren Commission, but this person emailing says, someone who history says actually took control of the Warren Commission and seemed to be calling the shots in the Warren Commission. Now, that to me seems very odd. But at the time, was that not considered something very strange that Alan Dulles would be such a key player on the Warren Commission?
Well, I considered it strange at the time, and I think there's good evidence now that we have the internal workings of the Warren Commission, the documents available. It's clear that Lyndon Johnson appointed Alan Dulles knowing he would be the chief cover-up artist. Alan Dulles, you know, the Warren Commission was created not to do an independent investigation. But to frame Lee Harvey Oswald, to say he was the lone gun assassin, and, you know, Alan Dulles and several of the others on the commission, including John McCloy, who was also very close to Alan Dulles, you know, with a background in Nazi, you know, funding and Nazi support himself, you know, these people were determined that no real investigation would be conducted. Any evidence, I mean, I'll give you an example. Lee Rankin, who was the chief counsel of the committee, Warren Commission, had evidence in January 64 that Lee Harvey Oswald was a likely an FBI agent. He was being paid by the FBI, Lee Harvey Oswald, $200 a month. The commission knew he was cashing the checks for information. The commission also knew that Lee Harvey Oswald had a CIA number that was being maintained by James Angleton of the CIA that was in a group of files where military had been induced to defect to the Soviet Union as if they wanted to give up their citizenship, but really they were part of a double agent program trying to penetrate the KGB, and it appears that Oswald was one of these agents. And Dulles, and, you know, in a meeting, there was a meeting January 22nd of the committee, 1964, and Dulles says, we have to suppress this information. Another meeting January 27th, Dulles says, we have to, it's too embarrassing to the agencies. So the Warren Commission lied and said that Lee Harvey Oswald had no relationship to the FBI or the CIA when, in fact, the record strongly suggests Lee Harvey Oswald was a government agent.
Wow, shocking. And is this one of the reasons, Dr. Corsi, that people really want his tax returns and they're still considered classified and not being released? Would his tax returns show that he had income from the government during that time?
I believe so. And again, you know, instead of having Lee Harvey Oswald represented as this lone nut, marginal guy who didn't have any money, it's likely that that's the role Lee Harvey Oswald was living as an agent. Remember, Lee Harvey Oswald was in his 20s. He was a young man. He was on the front line doing this duty as a government agent. And I think he was doing it very well. I think he was told to be in the Texas School Book Depository. He was either in the lunchroom of the second floor or the first floor eating his lunch. He never was, I believe, on the sixth floor. I don't think Lee Harvey Oswald fired a single shot. I think he was framed. I don't think he ordered the rifle. He didn't own the rifle. The rifle was ordered in his name. There was no receipt that he ever picked that rifle up. The evidence framing Oswald is overwhelming when you have a chance to really do the independent research and see what's been available, what's been produced over the last 50 years. There's 5 million pages in the archives, and people like Bill O'Reilly just quietly and go their way and tell the CIA disinformation story. You know, Buglossi, who's written a book that I think is just, you know, terribly biased on not evaluating the evidence. But Bill O'Reilly never makes reference to all the information that's available, that Lee Harvey Oswald may have, in fact, been framed and wasn't the shooter at all.
Has O'Reilly had you on his show to discuss your book?
Well, he'll never do that.
I would love to see that. That would be a great pay-per-view.
I think it'll happen, Jim. I don't think it'll ever happen.
Let's go to the phone lines now. We have Joanne with us in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hello, Joanne. You're saying you're talking tonight with Jerome Corsi.
Hi, Dr. Corsi. I'm just going to ask my question, then hang up. You can try and comment on it. I was very young when Kennedy was killed, and I may be wrong, but it just seems that no one questioned the Warren Commission report. And I've been through they had a Dallas tour, you know, the book depository tour, and after reading about it, it just seems really unlikely that just Oswald did it. But please comment on why there's been so little dispute. Were people afraid, or were conspiracy people ridiculed or threatened, or did people just not get all the facts?
Okay, great question.
Well, the CIA, almost immediately after the Warren Commission was published, there's a memo now that we have available. CIA said it was going to work with journalists who would promote the Warren Commission conclusion. People probably don't know it, but since the 50s, the The CIA and Operation Mockingbird have been paying journalists to do what the CIA wanted done, including very, very prominent journalists. Shocking when their names were disclosed. Joseph Alsop, very, very prominent journalist of the time. And the CIA in the same memo said that they would run psych ops, call conspiracy theorists, try to get bad reviews of their books, anyone who dared to question the Warren Commission. But still, after 50 years, today there's a group of people coming up who they weren't old enough when Kennedy was killed to really be involved. And remember, almost from the very beginning, the Warren Commission was ridiculed and not believed. Mark Lane came out with his book within a couple of years, Rush to Judgment. And over the last 50 years, the predominance of the books written in the literature done, the disclosures, the investigations, have established that there was a conspiracy. But yet, the CIA story of Lee Harvey Oswald continues in the mainstream media. And like so many mainstream media narratives, it's just out there to protect the CIA, to protect the powers that be. If the American people really understood that this was a coup d'etat in which the CIA assassinated the President of the United States, John Kennedy, I think that even today, people would want to tear apart the CIA like John Kennedy did, break it into 1,000 pieces. John Kennedy was also going to break up the Federal Reserve, which I think we should still do. And Kennedy would never have fought the Vietnam War. He wasn't going to fight in Laos. Again, the lying wars that the CIA won, and we're still dealing with CIA disinformation and lies today, not only with the Kennedy assassination, but in many very, 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 we're still fighting lying CIA wars. Saddam Hussein, no weapons of mass destruction, don't be surprised. Syria, CIA wants us, the Obama administration wants us to fight because they say Assad used chemical weapons. John Kerry, Secretary of State, says, I've got a report, a CIA report that shows it was Assad that used the chemical weapons, but you can't see the report. And the UN says, no, it was the rebels that used the chemical weapons. And when you ask who the CIA wants us to fight for in Syria, it's Al-Qaeda and these rogue terrorist groups, Islamicists. And again, what's that got to do with the U.S. national interest? We're still fighting lying CIA wars, and we're still fighting CIA disinformation that Lee Harvey Oswald killed President Kennedy, which I think is a ridiculous idea. There's no evidence whatsoever that Lee Harvey Oswald pulled any trigger on November 22nd, 1963.
And the name of the book is Who Really Killed Kennedy? Our guest tonight, Dr. Jerome Corsi. We're going to continue to take phone calls here and or email questions. So the phone calls will go first, 888-287-3316, toll free 888-287-3316, and the questions by email, jim@christianmoney.com, jim@christianmoney.com. Well, it looks like we're flooded with emails here. I don't have any callers right now. I think it's because of the holiday weekend, but we've got a ton of emails, and I want to go to this first email, somebody emailing from Southern California, and I have this same question. I'm going to paraphrase this. They want to know what Jack Ruby's motivation was, and they say here, didn't he know that he was likely to be shot and killed by a Dallas police officer when he pulled this stunt, and even if not shot and killed on the spot, that he would face what could be the death penalty for, even though it was the supposed assassin of the president, that he was basically giving up his life? And what would motivate a man to do that in that situation? Great question.
Well, this was a mob hit. Jack Ruby was a mob guy. He had extensive ties back to the mob in Chicago going back to 1930s. He'd been running guns out of Louisiana for the mob into Cuba. He had extensive mob ties, was very in contact with the mob just before he killed Lee Harvey Oswald. If the mob had told Jack Ruby that it was his job to kill Oswald and he didn't do it, the mob would have viciously killed Jack Ruby. He owed the mob a favor. I mean, go back to The Godfather. We'll do you a favor, but the day we ask, you better do what we want done.
An offer you can't refuse, so to speak.
An offer you can't refuse. I mean,
and he might have been thinking he was going to get out of this somehow with maybe a short sentence, and then he would have a marker with the mob for doing this.
It didn't matter. They just strung him up on a on a meat hook and killed him over 48 hours brutally. I mean, you know, or longer. He didn't want to die at the hands of the mob. He better.
It is amazing,
be
though, how many people, Dr. Corsi, dispute Jack Ruby's criminal ties. It seems like you couldn't find any more evidence on someone when you start looking into his past. But there are still people today that say there's really no ties there.
Well, it's astounding to me. It's always astounding to me, Jim, how easy it is for the government to lie and how gullible people are to believe what the government tells you. I mean, I'm an investigative reporter. I start with the premise that they're all politicians in the government are lying, no matter who they are. I start there. And I'm astounded when I find different.
Now, the next email I have here, somebody from the Chicago area, is asking what role, if any, did Oswald play? They're questioning here how could he have been at the place with the gun registered in his name as the purchaser, et cetera, et cetera. Could he have been one of the three shooters?
There's no way Oswald was in one of the three. Even the paraffin test showed he had not fired a rifle. I mean, again, people just have not done the research, it's the frame up is so good, the CIA frame up. Okay, Oswald ordered this weapon, a Mannlicher Carcano, from a post office box office that he bought, and the rifle was delivered. But Oswald, it was delivered in the name of A. Heidel, which was an alias. But yet Oswald did not fill out a form when he got that post office box authorizing any other addressee to receive mail in that box. So it would have been illegal for the A. Heidel addressed rifle to be delivered there. Secondly, there's no receipt that Oswald picked it up. Same with the handgun. And third, Oswald ordered a rifle from a particular ad that was placed by that mail order company. Oswald ordered a 36-inch Mannlicher Carcano rifle. The rifle that was found in the Texas School Book Depository was a different model. It was a 40-inch. Oswald said he never owned a rifle. The guy named Frazier, who drove Oswald to the depository that day and said he had a paper bag with curtain rods. Again, the Dallas police were brilliant and famous for creating evidence to frame people. Frazier at first said Oswald brought his lunch. Frazier was arrested. Frazier had a rifle in his own basement. Then Frazier was suggested that this lunch bag became the curtain rods bag. The curtain rods bag was made in the depository. The evidence is excellent. The Dallas police made the curtain rod bag, that no such thing was ever brought by Oswald into the Texas School Book Depository. Nobody ever saw him walk in with a bag that day. The bag was not photographed in the Texas School Book Depository on November 22nd, and there were no Oswald fingerprints on it, nor were there any gun grease from the gun on it. It was a total frame-up. Oswald said he didn't own a gun. He brought his lunch. He didn't bring curtain rods. There were curtains on the rooming house window that Oswald had. There was no reason to bring curtain rods. The whole thing was a frame-up by the Dallas police. And unless you do the research, unless you spend the time, or, you know, if you believe the government cover story, which the government lies on constantly, then Oswald was framed. Oswald may have been thinking he was penetrating this conspiracy. He may have felt like he was reporting it to the CIA and the FBI, that he was playing a role getting on the inside of this plot. But at the same time, when you're framing a patsy, you have to have the patsy go along with it, and then the last moment, the patsy realizes that he's stuck in a corner and all the evidence has been produced against him, and he looks guilty because there's two ways of interpreting his actions, either that he was part of the plot, or you could take a look at everything Oswald did and say, this is a government agent who was playing his role. And he wasn't a lone nutcase. He was, you know, capable of speaking Russian, capable of penetrating Russian, making the KGB believe he was working for them, came back with a Russian wife. He held security jobs. He was paid by the federal government to come back. He's being paid by the FBI, and the assassination occurred. And all this information, even today, people like Bill O'Reilly either don't know it, which is irresponsible for Bill O'Reilly to write the book and not have done the research, or he's just continuing the government cover-up because that's the role he's been asked to play.
Now, we have an emailer. They don't give us their location, but they're asking about the year 2017. They have two questions. Is there a significance about the year 2017 that we will see a huge cache of documents being released? That's question one. Question two is, do you believe there was a connection between the assassination of JFK and his brother RFK?
Well, first of all, 2017, there's supposed to be the last release of a large group of documents that are still being held secret by the CIA, and I'm going to hope that they are released. Some documents may not be released for 75 years, including some of the autopsy documents. So I'm waiting to see if we're going to get those documents or how many are yet going to be suppressed. And the question is, if Lee Harvey Oswald is guilty and the CIA knows it, why is the CIA still hiding information? I think Robert Kennedy was finally going to, if he had been president, was going to mobilize the government and was going to tell the American people the truth and find out the final pieces of it that he himself needed to know. But I think I think he understood that Oswald, when Jack Kennedy was killed November 22, 1963, when Robert Kennedy realized that Lee Harvey Oswald was being mentioned as the assassin, Robert Kennedy knew who Oswald was because Angleton had been maintaining these files, and Robert Kennedy called into the CIA and said, one of your guys killed my brother. Kennedy knew that he just needed the powers of the government to prove it, and I think the government, realizing that Robert Kennedy would have done what his brother did, expose the CIA and break up the CIA into 1,000 pieces, the CIA couldn't take the risk.
Do you believe that the Kennedy family at large knew the truth? For example, Ted Kennedy, a powerful senator, would he have had occasion to learn the truth? And some have speculated that maybe some of the wealth of the Kennedy family is sort of hush money paid from the government to the Kennedys for what happened and for them to not come out and break their silence.
I don't think there's hush money. I think that Ted Kennedy was less involved. He was younger. And I think Ted Kennedy, of course, did not, you know, I think he knew the risk to his own life if he pursued this issue. I don't think Ted Kennedy had the passion that Robert Kennedy did. Jack Kennedy was, you know, the son in Robert Kennedy's, universe. Robert Kennedy adored Jack Kennedy and was working, you know, to promote him every breath he took. I don't think Ted Kennedy had the same passion. And I don't think the Kennedys were paid hush money. I think that the Kennedy family today continues to believe that the assassination of Jack Kennedy and Robert Kennedy were both conspiracies. But yet, you know, they're not central to the government mechanism. They don't have any more ability than we do to get documents. And quite frankly, I mean, you know, I've devoted a lot of time and effort over the last 50 years to reading the books, to being in the archives. Doing this research takes a dedication, dedicated effort. There are many, many good researchers out there today, many excellent books being read, being written. If you take some time and look at the current books out there, there are quite a few that are really compelling.
And we loved your book, and in my book on the JFK assassination, we actually have a link in our ebook to your book. It's one of the four books that we recommend that people look at. Yours, Lamar Waldron. We also are interested in the new Roger Stone book. We thought that was a different angle to some extent, but an interesting
one. Quite good.
Yes, very good. Dr. Jerome Corsi, thank you so much for joining us. Fascinating, and people should get your book, Who Really Killed Kennedy, available in bookstores everywhere and over at Amazon.com.
Thank you very much, Jim. Great pleasure to be with you tonight.
Thank you very much, sir. Wow, that was a fascinating show. And you don't know how to follow up an interview like that. This guy, he knows his facts, whether you agree with him or not. He sure knows his facts. And the book is fascinating. If you like these kinds of books, it'd be a great book to grab to read over the holidays or to get the gift over the holidays. JFK, 50 Years Later. And don't forget, Bob Yetman and I, we have our own book out on that as well, which is Executive Order 11110. And you can grab that over at Amazon.com in the Kindle store. This is Jim Paris, here as always, to help you the most of God's money. We'll talk to you next week.
Been listening to Jim Paris Live. For more information about our program, visit ChristianMoney.com or send an email to Jim@ChristianMoney.com. Join us next week for another live program.